medicine or infection? Is it poison? Ointment. Light? Shadow. Blessing or curse? Today's passage is actually going to get into this a bit and hopefully shed some light on this whole situation. Jesus is absolutely brilliant as always. And so we're going to go to the scriptures to figure out what to do with these opposing responses to this idea of religion. So the passage today is in Luke. We've been going through the book of Luke, going through talking about the kingdom, his kingdom come. And we're in 18 today. This is the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. So what we're going to do is, normally what we do at Inversion on Sunday nights, I'm going to read through the whole passage, then we're going to break this thing down into pieces so we can get a good grip on what's going on in the passage, and then we're going to try to pull all of it together, synthesize it, and see what the big idea is, see what Christ is putting forward. So it will be up on the screens, but I'll go ahead and read it. If it helps you to just close your eyes and listen, then go ahead and do that. And let me just say that this passage is a Molotov cocktail of meaning. It is incredibly, incredibly explosive. So don't let the shortness of it trick you. All right. These are the words of Christ. He also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. Two men went up into the temple to pray. One, a Pharisee, and the other, a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other one. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, but the one who humbles himself will be exalted. All right. So first of all, this is a parable. Jesus is going to be going through a series of parables. So what is a parable? There's 1,000 different definitions for parables, but let me throw a few possibilities out for you. A parable is like an atomic bomb inside of an acorn. It's this tiny little thing that's put forward to you, but when it opens up, it's actually explosive and changes your whole worldview, changes everything. It's a story with intent. It's a little fiction and a big truth. Or like it says up there, like it will say up there nice and shortly. There we go. It's a minor story with a major truth. Now, if you're philosophical, here's a way to say it. It's indirect communication. See, one of the powerful things about story is story can get behind the big, thick plates of armor that we wear and get into the heart and do the surgery that it needs to do. It gets past a lot of our guards. I call parables ninja theology because it like sneaks in, and it gets past our normalization process, our way of thinking we know what's going on and then taming that truth. So parables sneak in and stab the heart in order to heal the heart. So that's a little bit about what a parable is. Let's look at this parable really quickly. Jesus, first of all, does a few things. He tells us who, where, why. So the who, or the Pharisee and the tax collector. I'll get to them shortly, but the where is the temple, right? It says that they're going up to the temple. Now, when it says going up to the temple, it doesn't matter if you were coming from east, west, north, or south. You always went up to the temple because Jerusalem was up on a hill, the temple was up on a hill, so no matter where you came from, you always went up to the temple. So these two men go up to the temple. Then Jesus gives us the why. What's the why? To pray. Now, when we hear the word pray, we think normally just private prayer. Like they're going to just walk in like a church. They walk into a church and pray and then walk out. But for these people, prayer meant public worship as well as private worship. So these two guys go up to the temple to worship. It's a little bit like coming to a church service. Now, there's two times that they did this mainly, which is 6 in the morning and then 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's when the sacrifice was made. That's when the animals were slaughtered and the blood was put on the altar and incense was offered and people would be there praying to God. So now we know the where, the why, and the who, but let's dig a little bit further into these two characters. So the Pharisee. Now, for a lot of us who've grown up in the church, this is just loaded. We automatically think hypocrite, totally self-righteous, big jerk, thinks he's amazing. But we have to be careful because when Jesus put this parable forward, Pharisees were looked up to. They were considered as righteous people. Yeah, of course, there were some hypocritical, but in general, they were looked up to because of their devotion to the law. So Pharisees were kind of like pastors, so to speak, supposedly. They're supposed to be devoted to the word of God, and they loved it so much that they did whatever it took to fall in alignment with it. So we have a few major groups of people in Israel at this time. We have the Pharisees, these very religious, devoted people. We have a group called the Sadducees. They were the political powerhouses. They had all the money. They were the priests of the temple. They were the ones that people loathed or really liked. They were the ones that the paparazzi followed around, so to speak. And then we have the Zealots. The Zealots were just completely ticked off at the Romans because the Romans had come in, and the Zealots were the revolutionaries. They were the ones who wore, like, the camo pants and listened to heavy metal music, and they were trying to find some way to destroy the government. And then you have the Essenes. The Essenes were these super uber religious ones who were like, we're going away from the city. We're going away from this culture. We're going out into the desert. We're storing up our canned good foods because the apocalypse is coming, and we're just going to study the Bible all day until Jesus makes everything right. And those are the Essenes. And then you have the Gentiles. Gentiles are all the unchurched people who were quote-unquote pagans who did not believe in the God of Israel. And then you had the Samaritans, which were a mix of the Gentiles and the Jews, which the Jews didn't quite like. So those are all the people groups, essentially. And the Pharisee is the one that's up here that everyone is looking at because they do things correctly. They are the Holy of Holies. They are the super saints. Now, let's flip over to the opposite end of the spectrum. The opposite end of the spectrum is the tax collector. Keep in mind, Israel this time, they are oppressed by the Roman government. The Roman government is hated. These tax collectors are those who are in league with the Roman government. They are people of Israel who know the land, who know the area, who know the people. And what Rome did was they would send out an area, or they would let an area out for the highest bid, and then a tax collector would take that highest bid, and then he would take all the money out of the people that he could, give what the Roman government wanted, and then he'd keep the rest for himself. He basically opened extortion franchises and bled his people. He was what we would consider a traitor. And the Jews said, hey, if we can lie to anyone, if we can cheat anyone, it can be the tax collectors because they are horrible. We don't need to be truthful to them. These men were absolutely despised. So we have two ends of the spectrum. We have a good guy and we have a bad guy, right? So that's a little bit about the parable in general. And it's nice to know those cultural, historical facts as we go through this. But let's be honest, like, we need this story to have a little more potency than it does. Because what we do with the parables of Jesus, time and tradition kind of beat the truth out of them. And we've taken these stories that were stallions and neutered them and made them geldings, and they don't have much potency to make anything creative in our life happen because they've become so tamed and so neutral and a nice little story and go, oh, that's, isn't that cute? So the thing with parables is they have a sting in the tail. They flip on you and they catch you. And so when we look at this and go, oh, isn't that nice? Then we've missed the whole thing. So what we need to do is we need to reload this. So what would this look like today? Well, how about this? How about you walk into a church service in a respected church in town? Let's say it's here at VCC. Worship is going on. They're singing about Jesus and his blood and his cross up front, and worship is going on just amazingly. And up in the front, there's a pastor. And the pastor's praying. And now this is a pastor who's highly respected. This is a pastor who preaches the Bible, and people know that he knows the Bible. This is a pastor who's not just in the Bible, but he's actually out in the world. We've been talking here about the sex trafficking, social justice crisis that's happening in the world, and how we need to respond to it. Well, this pastor, so to speak, knows that. Not only is he doing other causes, he's throwing his efforts into that. But now he's sitting here praying. Remember, we're talking about Jesus worshiping up front, and he's praying, and he goes, "I'm so glad I'm a Christian. I'm so glad I'm at church this morning. I'm so glad that I know what this passage is about this morning. I'm so glad that I'm not out there somewhere. I'm so glad that I'm faithful to my wife. I'm so glad that I like to pray. I'm so glad I'm not like those people out there. I'm so glad that I am not involved in that sex trafficking thing in the bad way. I'm so glad that I'm so awesome." Now, let's zoom out and go to the back pew. In comes someone, dressed nicely, heads into the back pew, sits down, puts his head in his hands, and just barely groans and says, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner." This man happens to be a pimp. This man happens to work here in the Bay Area on the wrong side of the sex trafficking, selling women to the highest bidders. And he walks in and says, "God, be merciful on me, a sinner." And then what we find out is when they both walk out of church that morning, Jesus, in telling this parable, says, you know who walked away right in their relationship with God? Because the word justified or righteous means right in their relationship with God. The pimp and not the pastor. It was the pimp who walked out in proper relationship. It was not the pastor. So I hope that gives this parable a little bit more of an oomph as we go through it. So let's look at this pastor and this pimp. Maybe. Okay, next. Thank you. Bad. All right. So here we go. They're up at the temple. The Pharisee standing by himself prays thus. So the Pharisee goes over and stands by himself. He walks in. It's kind of like walking right up to the front, taking the first few rows somewhere in there, and just going right to God. He has a lot of boldness. He has a little sense of entitlement. Now, the word Pharisee by itself means the separated ones. They separated themselves from those who were dirty. But he goes into the temple, separates himself, and then he starts to pray. And then he gives this list. And it is not the fivefold ministry. It is the fivefold eyes of awesomeness, right? He goes through and he says, I. I mean, we can see it right there. I thank you that I. I am not like those other people. Now, praying at this time, they would have spoken out loud, but not necessarily loudly. Just because you're speaking out loud doesn't mean you're speaking loudly, right? Like he could be mumbling these prayers and praying. Now, he's comparing himself to other people. This is one of the first things that we notice is he's comparing himself to other people. And then he says, I tithe, like everything. This is not tithing your income. This is tithing your income. And then you get gift cards for Christmas. And then you tithe 10% on your gift cards to Chili's and Applebee's or whatever it is. And then someone just hands you something, says, here's a little gift. And you like take that thing and you divide it. And then you put the rest into the church. It's you tithe everything going above and beyond what the law said at this point. And then it talks about him fasting. He says, I fast twice a week. Well, the Jew was only supposed to fast once a year. That was the Day of Atonement. That was the legal one. But then, because they wanted to make the law even, you know, more important, more better, they fasted a few times a year around festivals. They just made this part up. And then they decided, well, let's go even beyond that, and let's fast twice a week. So again, he's going above and beyond what the law prescribes. So he's feeling pretty good about himself right now. So again, he prays, thank you that I am awesome. Now, he's comparing himself to other people. And we need to pause here and get a little lesson from this. If we can take a little application away from this, here it is. When you start to compare yourself to other people and your comparison happens on the horizontal plane, it breeds contempt for other people and it breeds arrogance. Because normally who we compare ourselves to are those that we think are lesser than us. Nice and convenient for us to do that because we've kind of put ourselves up. And so now we're comparing ourselves to other people and then we have disdain for them because they are not up to our level. And then this creates a cycle of arrogance and contempt. But what we need to do is compare ourselves on the vertical plane. When we compare ourselves vertically with God, then it creates compassion horizontally because compared to the infinite, perfect, glorious one, we are completely broken and stained, and no one has a right to say, I'm better than X, Y, or Z. So when we compare ourselves vertically, then what happens horizontally is not comparison and contempt, but it's compassion and gratitude. So that's one thing we need to get out of this little piece here. Now let's go ahead, let's flip to the next one. Let's look at the pimp real quickly. He has almost opposite posture and everything going in. He goes in and instead of going right up to the front, again, he's in the back, he drops his head, and it says he starts beating his breast. Not just like, oh, woe is me, like repeatedly beating his breast because he's in anguish and he's essentially attacking his own heart. Now, this was a posture that was used mainly by women in the Bible, but every once in a while, it would be used by men when there's extreme grief. And one of those other times was at the cross when it says the multitudes walked away and beat their breasts because of what had happened to Jesus that day. So the pimp says one sentence. And it's not, I. It's, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And then he's done. And then he's done. So there's not a lot to say beyond that with him right now. But we will get back to his sentence, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. So let's head to the next slide here. This is where Jesus freaks everybody out. This is where Jesus extracts a gasp out of everyone who's listening because they know how this should end. They go, that guy's scum, that guy's righteous, and then Jesus drops the bomb on him. He turns this little acorn into this explosive atomic bomb and says, it's not who you think. The one who is right with God is the pimp, not the pastor. And they all go, ugh. Because he's flipped everything. This is a Copernican revolution. He's completely altered their worldview. He's shifted everything that they thought they knew about religion. And if we understand rightly what he's saying, this is where we should go, no. Jesus, we are not cool with your parable. It does not work. It does not fly with us. This is not appropriate. Even if we can grasp the gist of what he's saying with our head, our heart gags on it because we go, no, that's not fair. This guy does all this horrible stuff. How many lives has he ruined? And he comes in and says, be merciful, and then that's it? We want that fairness. We go, no, this isn't right. And this is where we get to the heart of this idea about religion. So back to the saying, religion. What is religion? Is it this blessing, or is it this curse, or is it the infection, or is it the medicine? Well, to figure this out, we need to go back to why they are where they are and why they're doing what they're doing. That is, they're at the temple and they're doing what? They're praying. They're at the temple and they're praying. This is the key to everything. This is the key to understanding what's happening, because at the heart of the temple, what's happening at the heart of the temple will explain what all of this means. Now, we have another problem, because when I say the word temple, our flags go up, right? Because we're moderns. And temple just sounds insane. Temple is a leftover from another age. Temple is uncivilized people who have a God of the gaps thing, and a temple is nothing but a house of superstition, right? Where you go and try to get things right with this God who doesn't exist because science hasn't come along and saved us. A temple is in the same sphere as fairies, wands, centaurs, the comic book-like gods from Mount Olympus, right? That's what a temple is like. No. The complete opposite, and the tax collector opens this up for us. The sentence that the tax collector says actually cuts to the heart of ultimate reality and opens everything up. Let's look at what he says. God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Okay, how does this open up what the tax collector is talking about? Well, here it is. So we get the God part, we get the sinner part, and we think we get the merciful part, but the word used specifically for merciful, and all you word nerds are going to like this, is not the normal Greek word, which is eleison. We might know that from some hymns, kyrie eleison. It's not that word for merciful. It's this completely different word that's so weird here. And that word is, okay, helaskomai. You don't have to remember that, so don't worry. But that word means mercy seat. That word means atone, or if you want to get super technical for some of you theological minds, that means to propitiate. So what? Where is this going? What does that mean? Well, this is the key to everything. So let's jump to Leviticus, everybody's favorite book of the Bible. Woohoo! Right? Leviticus. Let's hop over there. The scripture will pop up. And let me read you these verses in Leviticus. This is God, he's speaking to Moses. This is after the Exodus, right? The Exodus has happened. The people are free from the bondage of slavery. God has made a covenant with them. And now he says, let's build this tabernacle so we can commune. The Lord spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron when they draw near before the Lord and died, and the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat that is on the ark so that he may not die. Okay, let's jump down to 13. And then put the incense on the fire before the Lord that the cloud of incense may cover the mercy seat that is over the testimony. That's the law. That's the Ten Commandments so that he does not die. And then let's jump to 15. Then he shall kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people and bring its blood inside the veil and do with its blood as he did with the blood of the bull, sprinkling it over the mercy seat and in front of the mercy seat. Okay, so this is what's happening at the temple, essentially, the day of, even though this is talking more about the Day of Atonement, this is similar to what's happening when the tax collector and Pharisee are there. So in summation, here's the deal. God pulls the people out of slavery. Now he wants to commune with them out in the desert. They have this little tabernacle. It's all built and all set up. There's an outer court, an inner court, and then the Holy of Holies. And you can't just walk into God's presence because we are so broken. His light is so pure, it'll shine through us like we were just shadows and vaporize us and destroy us. But there's a way, and it has to do with blood and killing these goats. And it sounds really magical and really mythical and really silly if we're honest about it. But inside this Holy of Holies, there's this thing called the Ark of the Covenants. Indiana Jones fans probably have a vision in your head right now. This is the Ark of the Covenants, and it had a top, a cover. And it was made of gold, and it had two angels with his wings kind of bowed, so it looked almost like a throne. And inside this thing were the Ten Commandments. And the Ten Commandments were those things every one of us fulfills every day, right? Ten Commandments were the things that convicted and condemned everyone because everyone broke all of them. It was a list of things of why we deserve to die. And picture this. Over that was this top covered with gold. And then the priest would walk in with blood, and he would put that on top of this thing and before it. And what you have is you have God who's looking down on this law that destroys and crushes us. And in between this law and God is this blood. This is the mercy seat. This is how mercy comes. Something steps in between God and broken man, and it's represented here as blood. So think of it this way, a temple, it's not some magical, mythical thing. A temple is where God and mankind meet. It's the link between heaven and earth. That's what a temple used to mean. So it's the link between heaven and earth. So let's jump back now to with the Pharisee and tax collector. This is brilliant what Jesus does. He tells the people who are listening that the pimp says, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. He has the order right. Starts with God, and then he's a sinner, but there's something grammatically that steps in between those two, mercy. And that mercy has to do with blood poured out, put on a seat. Are we starting to see where this is going? Jesus says, this guy leaves the temple right with God, not because he just has some general idea of mercy. He's actually in the temple. He's seeing this thing slaughtered. He's seeing the blood put out there. And he's seeing the incense go up, and he says, God, hear my prayers. Atone for me. Mercy seat me. Save me, because I am so broken. I cannot do it. You saw what I did this weekend as a pimp. You know. I have no chance. None. Mercy seat me. So this is how the Old Testament and New Testament dovetail brilliantly. This is so amazing. The temple is not magical, mythical. It's not this silly rite. It is like a big green interstate sign on the way to San Francisco. We're on 580. We're heading to San Francisco, and there's a big green interstate sign that says San Francisco, 25 miles this way. And what do? We go, oh, that's a sign. That makes sense. It's giving me a direction. It's pointing to an actuality called San Francisco. The temple and all this weird magical, mythical stuff that we look at in the Old Testament and go, I don't like that Old Testament God. That stuff is big green signs that say San Francisco this way, but it all points not to San Francisco, but the Son of God. It all points to Jesus. And so the Old and the New Testament just blend brilliantly. It's this perfectly crafted, beautiful story. Now, let's go to the next slide here. This is who Jesus is. Jesus is the true temple. Jesus is the true meeting place between man and God. He was the ultimate temple. He was the one all the temples pointed forward to. He was the true mercy seat. He was the place, him on his cross, the place where the wrath was poured out. He was the place where the blood came between the law, what condemned us, and the God who we needed to be with. He was the true substitute, the goat, the ram that was slaughtered. No, that was not going to do. We needed one who was God and man who took that place. And he was the king. That was his throne to sit on. That's why the glory rested over that thing called the ark, because someday the one would come who would sit on that and be the king who saved us. So what do we do then in response to seeing what this is saying? Do we go, oh, okay, well, what do I do? What do I do? No. To say, what do I do in response to this story, is to take the tax collector and to turn him into the Pharisee and start the cycle all over again. See, this story, all the parables are kind of like the rubber mallet of a doctor. Like, he hits your knee and you have this reflex, but this is on the heart. What does the reflex of the heart say? See, our reflex should look at this and go, God, you know my past. You know my addictions, my social addictions, and you know my substance addictions. You know everything I've done, and yet you still took my place. The reflex of the heart should be, you are so glorious. What can I do besides bow down before you and have gratitude pour out? Let me just say, if the reflex of the heart is, wow, I'm glad I'm not like that Pharisee. Wow, I'm glad I totally get what he's saying. I'm glad that I'm not the person in the back pew who's just like, can I leave here and go get lunch? I'm glad I... Then God have mercy on us. May he just break our heart until we see how amazing his grace is. Until we just fall down and go, thank you for mercy seating me. Thank you for atoning for me. And this is the difference between religion and gospel. Now, I'm going to use the word religion pejoratively here. There is a difference between true and false religion, but when the world thinks of religion, they think of, I do these things, and so I need to work my way to God's approval. And that's why you have videos like that one I showed, someone saying, I hate religion. And then you have the other video that says, I love religion. Well, that's because in one person's dictionary, religion means I do these things. And then in the other dictionary, it means true religion, which means I bow before the gospel of God. So the difference between true and false religion is this. The Pharisee embodies the idea that I am awesome, I do these good things, and God owes me. Gospel is this guy walking in, just beating his breast, going, I have no hope. It should be me that's slaughtered. Atone me. Have mercy on me. False religions are like holding up a Kleenex to the Pacific tide and trying to stop the tide. There's no chance. False religions, this idea of I do to get accepted, are like spitting at the sun to try to snuff it out. All you're going to do is cover yourself with spit and make the situation worse. These are what false religions are like. These are the differences. So the goal of all this is not to give you guys some application to go out and do. The goal of all of this is to gaze upon the glorious face of Jesus. It's to realize that our medicine is the hero getting the infection for us. It's to realize that our blessing is the one who blessed taking the curse for us. And then because we see this glorious thing, because we see this glorious transaction, this joyous exchange, as Martin Luther called it, we have this vertical response of praise and love, and this horizontal response of compassion, whether it be to, say, a poet or a priest or a pimp. Because that's how gracious and amazing our God is. He changes us so that we can go out and love on those who need his love. Will you pray with me? Father, your love is astounding. Your love is beyond what we can even fathom. Lord, I thank you that you taught in this brilliant way of parables that you explode love into our life, that you plant these little acorns into our heart and grow something beautiful from them. Lord, I pray that this parable today affects us and changes us by the power of your Spirit, and may it not just be information. Lord, show us Christ, give us a vision of who he is and how incredibly relevant he is and how incredibly dangerous but perfectly good and beautiful and amazing he is. Lord, thank you for this opportunity to preach your holy word. We love you with all of our hearts. We pray this in the precious name of Christ who gave everything for us. Amen.